Om Shanti. Good evening to everyone. So, warm welcome to this Sunday evening talk once again. I would just like to know, because I am seeing many new faces today, how many of you have come first time to this Sunday evening talk? Very nice. So, a special welcome to all of you. So, these Sunday evening talks are regular feature of Shanti Sarovar, and these talks are conducted every Sunday evening from 6:30 to 8 p.m. On various topics, variety of topics, and taken by different speakers, facilitators. Many times they come from, you know, different places of the world, and sometimes in-house people of Shanti Sarovar. So we are very fortunate that we, you know, find ourselves very fortunate that we are able to interact with them, and we are taking advantage of them, their presence here, and their wisdom, knowledge, experience, and many things. So, I think many of you might not be much aware of Brahma Kumari's organization. How many of you are? Who are very new to Brahma Kumari's? Okay, I don't think. So, still I would like to give a brief introduction of Brahma Kumari's. So, Brahma Kumari's is a spiritual university where we practice, people practice or teach Raja Yoga meditation. And the main aim of Brahma Kumari's is self-transformation leads to world transformation. So what do you think, what is the first requirement to achieve this aim? Self-transformation leads to world transformation. Yes. Okay. Okay. Nice. Any other one? Anyone else? Correct. So actually, if the aim is self-transformation leads to world transformation, the first requirement is to know or understand or realize the self. So how many of you are there who know themselves? Really? So the self is, as we say, we believe, but I think we have not realized that we are all one energy or spiritual being, or we call as soul, right? So there are many different qualities of the soul, different properties, and if we get to know or understand those qualities, we will be able to realize one day, right? So this is what we do in Raja Yoga meditation, where we know ourselves first. Who am I, right? So I would say soul possesses many different virtues, qualities, or it is made up of those qualities. Like? Yes. Purity, peace, happiness, love. Right? So as today's topic says, happiness formula. So happiness is one of the quality of the soul. Today morning I read one message. The key to happiness is to answer the question, who am I? Right? So to give more insights on today's topic, we have Brother Yogesh Sharda with us, who has come all the way from Turkey. So I would like to call him upon the stage with a round of applause. So Yogesh Sharda, brother, as his name says, he is a yogi soul, and he's very humble, please brother. And I would say embodiment of peace, as peace, you know, you can see on his face, and humbleness, contentment. So I would like to read his brief introduction. So he was born in Malawi, Africa, with an Indian background, and brought up in London and Oxford, England. He has been a professional development trainer and workshop facilitator for over last 20 years, presenting many hundreds of seminars, workshops and courses for businesses, hospitals, universities, youth organizations and local community groups throughout Europe, UK, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, Australia, USA, Central and South America and India. So we all are very fortunate to be here today with Brother Yogesh. So be free to ask anything, to experience the power of meditation as he is practicing Rajyoga meditation from last many years. So thank you, and I would like to call Vasanta sister to welcome him by the bouquet. So I would not take much time, and thank you very much. Over to brother.
So hello and good evening everyone. Thank you for a warm and generous introduction. I hope I'm able to live up to the standard she has set. Can I ask who was at the session yesterday that we had? Quite a few. I was hoping to do the same jokes again, but I think I can't. Sister Deepika mentioned, I've been in this study and this practice of Rajyoga meditation, self-awareness for most of my life. Africa, and then living in London, Oxford, and then for the last 18 years or so I've been based in Istanbul in Turkey, and from there traveling around Turkey and across the region for these kinds of sessions, and I would say it's a service. And that's what inspires me, is I always felt from a very young age that something was wrong with the equation of life that we have today. You know, I couldn't understand why it is that we have such great breakthroughs in science and technology and healthcare, communication, transportation, but at the same time people seem to not be able to get on with each other. How come we still have wars in the 21st century? It seems very primitive to me. And so I wanted to live a life of response to the human condition. And what became clear to me as I understood the spiritual knowledge more is that in fact we don't have a crisis in the environment. It's not a crisis in, for example, politics. We don't have a crisis in economics, but these are all symptoms. And the real crisis, the real area where we have to focus on, is the human issues. How can human beings get along better with each other? And when we explore that, then it also becomes clear that at the root of it is our personal relationship with our own self. And it seemed to me that this was really the missing area in human life. How can I be at peace with my own self? How can I develop a good relationship with my own self? If I can do that, if I can manage my mind, my thoughts, my emotions, then necessarily my relationships with others will improve. But if I'm not at peace with myself, if I harbor anger or resentments or bitterness, and if I give space to that in my own mind, then it will spill over into the way I treat other people and my relationships with others. So hence I became interested in exploring the human condition. Firstly, of course, to work on my own self. How can I improve as an individual, as a person? How can I deal with the energies of anger? How can I overcome the energy of ego? And then to become part of an educational process by which these ideas can be shared with others. And so in this context, we're going to look at happiness tonight. What happiness is, why do we wish to be happy? Can we come up with some kind of formula for happiness? So let me start just by asking you, what makes you happy? Sorry?
Not making others unhappy.
Okay, all right. Feeling contented. Okay. All right. Anything else? What makes you happy?
Some very, very small things, like looking at my daughter, that smile.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. So all the happiness people are in the first two rows. Anybody a bit further back? Anything make you happy?
If my plans go as expected.
Okay, it's very simple, very straightforward. Yeah? Yes, sir?
These two kind of happiness, one is satisfied, is the happiness, or the doing others happy is happiness.
The second part is doing?
Doing the happy others is happiness.
Okay. Okay, fine. All right. Yes, sir?
I feel happy.
All right. Okay. Okay, how about the ladies? Any happiness over there? All right, okay. Pleasant weather and greenery, yeah? Okay. All right, so how come nobody said when I have like $10 million? You don't want that? No, it doesn't make you happy? When I have my private jet, no? Well, exactly. That's what we're going to explore. No? So the second question related is, let's say you're happy, but then for some reason your happiness reduces, or you lose your happiness. Why? What causes you to lose your happiness? How would you answer that? Yeah, okay, it's beautiful, interpreting in a negative way. Pardon? Okay, I didn't fully hear that. Realization of? Okay, that's for the happiness. What about, what makes you lose happiness? Why would you lose your happiness? Okay, okay. Alright. Yeah. Then you get unhappy. Okay. What about if there are, you know, some life events? You know, sometimes serious things happen, and you know, for example, you lose your job or you lose a person. Would that make you unhappy? The question is, should it make you unhappy? Yeah. All right. The question is then, what does our happiness depend upon? That's what we want to explore. Because happiness is one of those terms which is used and misused in many contexts. For the most part, I find when a person says, I'm very happy, it can mean, for example, I'm having a good time. You know, things are going well, I'm enjoying myself. So there's that kind of short-lived happiness which is because circumstances are favorable to you. There is that. There is the happiness which we may call as pleasure, for example. Yeah. When there are events, social events, something which is making you feel excited, or you're eating something you like, makes you feel happy. But we also know that the need to experience happiness, I believe, is one of the subconscious drivers for what is pushing us through life. And anybody who works in the marketing, the advertising industry, would know this. Most of the advertising I think we find around us is happy images. For example, a happy family, smiling, happy, looking great. And you see that and you think, wow, I want my family to be like this. And then the message is, well, if you want that, you need to buy this. And guess what? We can sell it to you. Right? Or a happy couple or a happy individual. So we see scenes and images of happiness which attracts our attention. And that's the glue. That's the glue which connects us to something. Then, of course, is the message that we can provide you with this to be happy. But as spiritual people, as people interested in the spiritual dimension of life, we know that we don't want the happiness which is here today but gone tomorrow. We don't want short-lived happiness. We don't want the happiness which is circumstantial, based upon situations being the way I want or other people behaving according to my preference. We know for sure situations will change. People will change. Everyone in your life will at some point move on and pass away. You also will do the same. So it means that if we want to experience that deeper, stable happiness, we have to understand a bit more about the mechanisms of life. And so in terms of the formula for happiness, there's three or four things that I was thinking to share with you. One or two may be a little similar to the things we touched on yesterday. The first one I would describe as being soul care. Now, what do we mean by soul care? It really means taking the time, taking conscious time and attention to nourish the soul. And why? Because when you nourish the soul, then you increase your inner strength. And without inner strength, you're not able to maintain your happiness. We know situations will come to us suddenly. Tests and shocks in life come without warning. And no matter how much wisdom you may have or how many books you've read, if you don't have inner strength, you cannot apply that wisdom into the practical life. Sometimes people acquire huge amounts of knowledge, but no change in their life, because there is not the balance of developing the inner strength to make it practical. So let's look at one or two ideas to help us understand maybe the adjustments we could make in our lifestyle to promote this idea of soul care. So I'm going to use this to indicate what I mean. Here are some of the main areas in life where we invest our time and energy. Now, can you all see over there? Yeah. Let's say six areas over here. So one of the main areas for most people is their family. We give time and energy to our family. Another, of course, is to our work. Another perhaps is our friends circle. Another one maybe is some kind of study. Perhaps another could be our health, our physical health, and maybe some leisure or some hobbies and so on. And so six are main areas which tends to consume most of our time and our energy. And we find ourselves jumping from one to the other to the other. So here I am with family, taking care of my family, then go to work, right? Spending a good amount of time at work to earn enough to feed the family, take care of the family. Then I have to attend some event with my friends, take care of the social life. Then I may be doing some kind of study or some course, so I need to reserve some time for this. Then maybe some working out or going to the gym or playing badminton,
as they do next door here, I understand. There may be some leisure activities, some hobbies. So we go from one to the other to the other, then we jump back here to family, then it's time for some more study, then go to work, then take care of the health. There's a social occasion, somebody's birthday with a friend, back to leisure, back to work, back to family. Yeah, we tend to do this. We're jumping around from one to the other to the other. And it's a little bit like a monkey jumping around in the branches of a tree. Right? And this may end up in some sense, some feeling of stress, some feeling of burnout, and perhaps also a feeling of meaninglessness. You know, I'm doing all these things, but something is missing. What would you say is missing in this model? Right? What's missing is me. Where am I? I got so busy in doing that doing became a dharma. Doing became the religion. And I think most of our thoughts are concerned with the things we have to do, right? Or the things we need to take care of. But very rarely do we take time to experience just being. As is often quoted, you know, we are human beings, but we have become human doings. We have become human goings. So here is an alternative model that we would suggest, which involves really soul care. It doesn't mean to abandon your responsibilities. It doesn't mean to discard what you need to do to take care of your daily life. But it means that at the very center of your life should be my own self. I should be at the center of my life, and that means taking care of the soul, taking care of my inner self. And from there, go to work, do your job, do it well, do the best you can, excel in what you can do, but don't lose yourself. Return back to yourself. You are not your job, right? You do your job. Don't let your job consume you, because then the soul suffers, your inner power suffers. Take care of your family. Look after your family. Carry out your responsibilities and duties. But also remember, even that is a role you play. It's a family role. You are not the role. So return back to yourself. Be with your friends. Yeah. Enjoy their company. Love them. Let them love you. Be together. But don't lose yourself. Come back to your own self. Right? With each of these, this model tells us, do, but don't lose yourself in the doing. This is called truly respecting yourself. Respecting the soul. And it means taking conscious time to do that every day. When you do that, you empower yourself spiritually. And that power enables your happiness to remain steady when the hits come, when the challenges come. When our power is less, then we are unable to manage or control our own emotions. This makes sense to you? Yeah. Taking time to do this every day. Can I ask who already here does some kind of meditation? Okay, so not so many. And who here is a meditator? And who's wondering what's the difference between the two? Many people do meditation, you know, as a way to de-stress, to relax, to handle the challenges of life, and that can be fine, that can be okay. But to be a meditator, means that it's a lifestyle. It means as you go through your daily life, one part of you is very naturally checking to see what kind of thoughts am I producing? Am I overthinking? Am I thinking uselessly? Am I wasting this precious, precious fuel of thought power? It's rather like an athlete. Let's say somebody wants to win the gold medal in the Olympics. Now for her or for him, eating healthy and exercise is a lifestyle. You offer that person a plate full of pakoras. She or he will say, maybe no thanks, or maybe just one. So that person will very naturally be aware of the calories involved and the effect that food has upon the body, because she or he needs to maintain an ideal weight, for example. In much the same way, to be a meditator is a bit like being a mental athlete. As you go through the day, you don't want to overspend your thought energy. You don't want to throw away the thought power, which is actually the basis of your whole life. And it's not a kind of, you know, forced or pressurized checking, creating tension, not that, but a very natural awareness you have. How am I thinking? How am I doing? Am I wasting my thought energy? Am I thinking too much about something? Am I holding on to a useless memory which really belongs to the past? And if you get into this lifestyle of self-checking of your thought energy expenditure, then you find you have the strength, you have the inner power to deal with difficult situations. For example, sometimes you need the willpower to do something which normally is beyond you. Or you need great tolerance to handle something that's very challenging for you. Or you need the courage to make a decision which you're not sure which way it would go. If you are in the practice of saving your thought power, that thought power naturally accumulates within the soul. That's what helps you in those sudden moments of need. So building this into your daily life is very useful for managing your thought energy. Now, as many of you are new to meditation, let's just do a little practice now. Yes, sir? You have a question? Is it related to this, or can it come later? We can take those questions at the end of the session. All right. I'll remember that. If I fail to answer it, please raise your hand and tell me. I'd be very happy to explore that. Let's just do a little practice now, which may be useful for you to take away and do in your own life, just to experience how to do this, how to go to the inner self and experience that inner peace. So I'll ask you to sit with your back straight, if you would, and your feet flat on the floor. And we'll just have silence, no music, please. No music. Just be quiet. And this very simple exercise just invites you to be with yourself. So when we do visualization, creative visualization, we use the power of images. So if you want, you can just close your eyes for this. So for these few moments, I choose to be with my own self. I reserve these next few moments to visit the peace within my own self. So just bring your awareness to yourself and bring your awareness up to your face. And bring your awareness to the center of your forehead. And here, just picture in the center of your forehead a small room. This small room in the center of your forehead is your quiet room of peace. When you are inside your quiet room of peace, feel very relaxed. This is your private and personal space. Inside your quiet room of peace, you can be yourself. Inside this room, you can let go of the pressures and demands of your daily responsibilities. You can drop the masks that you wear every day. You can step back from the labels and the identities of your day-to-day life. Feel the peace and the calmness of your quiet room. Just allow your mind to absorb this atmosphere of serenity, tranquility. And as you do so, the thoughts begin to slow down. The mind becomes quiet. Just be with this feeling of peace in your mind for 1 minute. And now, gently, keeping this peace with me, I return to the awareness of this room here. And when you feel ready, you can open your eyes. So, how do you feel? You want to feel a bit more relaxed? It's not so difficult, you know, and if this works for you, build it into your daily life. Make this journey from doing back to being. Visit the quiet room inside and do that regularly. And it's like recharging the soul battery. It's so important, especially in the world today where, you know, with our little machines, we're receiving so many messages, so much information, misinformation, disinformation. You know, we look after our phones so well, don't we? Yeah. For most people, it's the most important machine in their life, the smartphone. For some, it's like an internal organ. They'd rather lose a kidney than lose a smartphone. But that much care, that much value we should give to our own mind as well, which is the greatest technology we possess. Just as our bodies need water and oxygen, so our mind needs silence, needs peace. And if we build this into our day, take a moment of silence whenever you can through the day. I would suggest at least twice in the day, especially if you're a working person or you have a busy household. Mid-morning, mid-afternoon, take a moment, go to the quiet room. This is based upon the premise that this peace is always inside us. This peace is our original nature. This peace is the true dharma of the soul. And how different life is when the mind is at peace, when the mind is stable, when the mind is calm. A quiet mind is able to see solutions to situations. A noisy mind, a racing mind, cannot recognize a solution even if it's sitting in front of me. Even if solution slaps me in the face, I don't realize it if the mind is rushing. So this is a great art and a great need in life today. Go to the quiet room. Think, for example, of a child, and some of you here are parents, probably grandparents, some of you. You know, if your child is really misbehaving at home, you may say, go to your room, be quiet. Same way, when your mind is misbehaving, when you're feeling a bit upset or a bit negative or complaining, mind, go to your room. Go to your room, be there. Experience the peace there. And then come back out and continue in, you know, with what you're doing. So that's one thing, soul care. Second thing to touch upon, which really is the second main component of upgrading your experience of life, is what I would loosely call as your life view. Yeah? The way you see life, what life means to you. And yesterday we looked at a model. I didn't complete the model as we had little time, but I'd like to put it up again for those who weren't there and then add another part to it which we didn't touch on yesterday. And I find this extremely significant and very useful to remember whenever you may feel your happiness is shaking or you may come into some kind of negative state. I'll summarize. All of us are surrounded by events. Right? Events are things which happen around you, the weather, the news, or maybe even in personal life, the way people speak to you, praise, criticism, success, failure. All of these are events. And you can't do too much about the events around you. But what we do as individuals is we give meaning to these events. The event is outside of me, but the meaning I'm giving with my mind. And so, some event could happen in front of all of us here, but each person can give different meaning to it according to their own thinking. For me, it could be something terrible. For you, it could be something very amusing. For another person, it's a disaster. For yet another, it could be uninteresting. The event is the same, but the meaning each one is giving according to their own thinking, from their own mind. Now, why this is important is because the meaning that you give to the events is then generating the way you feel, your emotional state. Whether you feel happy or sad or upset or excited or fearful or worried, this is the sequence. First, something happens. Then two, very, very, very quickly, in a nanosecond, your mind gives meaning to it. It happens so fast, you don't even realize you do it. And equally fast, the emotion is generated. And suddenly, you're filled with this emotion. And although we may see on the board that, yeah, I can see how this sequence works, but in daily life, in practical life, we don't live like this. In practical life, we live under an illusion. And that illusion is that the way I feel is a direct result of an event. So hence we say, you know, I am so upset because of something which happened today. Or, I feel so angry because of the way somebody spoke to me, and that's why I'm having a bad day. I am so worried because of XYZ. True or false? I'm expecting false. We think it's true, but it's actually false. You're not angry because of the way somebody spoke. You're angry because of the meaning you are giving to the way somebody spoke. Okay, let me come to that. Other events can be there. For example, you know, we may often say that some major event in life, you know, the loss of a job perhaps, or the death of someone close to you, we tend to associate that with sorrow and pain and suffering. But if we look at it very deeply, it's also due to the meaning I am giving to the event, which is generating that emotion. What I'm saying here is that what we have lost in our lives is to take care of and improve the meaning that we give to events. We are very focused upon events. And we try to change events, we try to change people, in order to feel better. But when you try to fight events, or fight people's behavior, you will necessarily generate stress for yourself. It's impossible to control events and people. In fact, this is actually not happening. What is really happening is I'm giving meaning to events, which is generating the emotion. So the message here is, let me stop trying to control the event. Instead, let me take charge of the meaning I am giving to events, and let me upgrade that meaning. Now we come to your question. How do you do that? For that, we need to understand what makes up meaning. What are the components of meaning? What is the meaning of meaning? Yesterday we looked at one thing. I won't do the same thing again. Yesterday we looked at perspective. But today, let's just spend a few moments looking at the second component of meaning. And that is context, right? The context within which you see something is giving meaning to that something. If you change the context, you change the meaning. And if you change the meaning, you change the way you feel. So how can you change the context? Let's have a look at a few possible contexts for life. To understand, how can we upgrade the context? Now, each one of us is living with a context for life. Now you may say that, well, I have not consciously created a context of life, but all of us, we absorb a context for life from education, from parenting, from culture, from the things we see around us, from the media. It creates a context about what life means. And then once you create that context, everything you experience is colored by that context. Absolutely everything. Even simple things like, success. What does success mean to you? I think it's a great question for each person to ask themselves. How do I define success? At the end of my life, when my time is over in this life, on what basis would I say I led a successful life? Yeah. If I have a clear definition, then I can live a life according to that definition. So let's look at context to understand how should we see life. So here are a few various ideas that different groups have come up with. Some people say, I see life as a business. So it means, you're in a kind of competition with others and you have to get as much as you can. You have to be the biggest business person. Some see everything in life as business. Some say life is like... Some see life as some kind of prison. They say it's all suffering. I'm being punished here. It's like I'm trapped. Some see life as a battlefield. And they put on their war face when they wake up in the morning, battling with people, battling in relationships, battling in the traffic, battling in the office, battling with everyone. Because they see life as a battle. Some may see life as a theater. A theater stage. Right? Or some may see life as a school. These two, just to cut things a bit short and summarize, these two we recommend. Right? See life as a school. If life is a school, then who are we? Students. If life is a school and we are students, then who are the teachers? Events and? Yes, sir? People around us, but especially the people you find difficult. Right? Do you have at least one difficult person in your life? Right? Is that person here in this room? Waiting for you at home, maybe. Right? And so what's the message here? We all find some people easier to deal with, some people difficult. So consider a difficult person to be a teacher in disguise for you. Yeah? Means change the context. Do not say, oh, he's difficult, she's difficult. No. Life is a school. If life is a school, and if we are students, and if events and people are teachers, then what is the curriculum in this school? What is there for us to learn?
Good qualities.
Yes. Basically this. The highest of all studies is the study and the research of virtue. That's the thing. That's the message here. In every situation, life is asking me to develop greater virtue. In some situation, work on your patience. In other situation, develop your tolerance. Some other situation, embolden your self-respect. Another situation, learn to forgive. So the thing is, I should focus upon the virtue I need to develop in myself rather than the person or the event I don't like. That's called spiritual and personal evolution. Do not see the teacher. Do not focus on the teacher. Focus on the teaching. If you focus on the teacher, you say, why is she teaching me? Why is he teaching me? You know, then you get lost in the personality of the individual, and then things get all messed up. But instead ask, okay, what is the school of life teaching me right now? Here is an opportunity for me to grow. Right? You know, as there is the saying that when you want a flower to grow, let's say you want a rose to grow, what do you give it to make it grow?
Water.
Water, yes, and?
Sunlight.
Fertilizer. How does fertilizer smell?
Not very nice. Right?
It's foul smelling. But the flower, the rose, is so smart, it uses something foul smelling to make itself grow. So if a rose can be so smart, why can't we be so smart? So next time life gives you fertilizer, what should you do? Right? Should you throw it back saying no thanks? Ask yourself, okay, here is a situation. How can I grow through this? How can I use this situation to make me personally evolve, to mature as a human being? And I find this makes all the difference. The difference is in the way you see things. Now some people I find, whenever you meet them, you know, every month or week after week or year after year, they tend to remain the same. Same complaints, same issues, same conversations, similar sort of level of emotional and spiritual maturity. Other people you meet, each time you meet them, it's like they are growing. Each time you meet them, you feel they're on some kind of journey. What's the difference? Their circumstances may be similar, but the difference is in the way of seeing life and the way of relating to those circumstances. One is always fighting, complaining, criticizing. The other one is learning, growing, maturing, developing. The focus is on what I can learn. Now over here, you know, we consider education of the soul to be the main prior thing in life, especially these days. And so this attitude of what I can learn and grow helps me to have a healthy context for all situations. And that context gives a very good meaning to the events in my life. And with that kind of meaning, you're able to maintain your happiness. So I asked about, you know, angry. If somebody's angry with you, right? Do you think you're saying that? No. So if somebody's angry with you, so why should that be a problem for me? Right? If someone's angry, they're out of control. Right? Now, of course, it's not nice someone's angry at you. But the thing is that the way I feel, my thoughts and my feelings are entirely my responsibility. Two things are there. One, I want to remain stable and unaffected by somebody's anger. But two, I want to help that person so they come out of their anger. When someone's angry, they are actually suffering at that moment. So what do I see? Do I see the angry person? Or do I see the sufferer who's behind that anger? If I see the anger, I can either get angry back, or I can get afraid, or I can get upset. If I see the sufferer who's behind the anger, then my condemnation would change into compassion. Because anger is this energy which, as is described, when someone is angry, they are in a temporary state of insanity. Anger is blind. And if I'm able to maintain my cool, which takes practice, I can actually help that other soul to also be free from their anger in that situation. So again, changing the context changes the meaning and changes the way I feel. So I'd recommend these two. If they are new for you, experiment. Life is a school. And whenever something unpleasant is in front of you, ask yourself, what can I learn here? Second one, life is a theater. And in a theater, every single soul actor has their own unique and individual part to play. In the theater of life, we are both performers, but also we are audience for each other. So we have to learn the art of knowing when to perform and when to be an audience. When to perform, when to be an audience. But the thing you cannot do is you cannot take the director's hat and start telling the other actors what they should be doing. Right? If you try to direct the role of other actors, you are breaking the rules. And if you break the rules, there is a penalty. The penalty is you lose your happiness. You lose your peace of mind. So the message here is, in my mind, let me not try to control the behavior of others. Now, this does not mean do nothing. For example, if your kids are misbehaving, you won't just say, okay, Om Shanti, do what you like. If you're a boss and your employee is always coming in late, you say, oh, it doesn't matter, I'm doing Raj Yoga now, so, you know, come in what time you like. No. It means that instead of living a life of reaction, you take action rather than reaction. When you react, you're out of control. But action is, I see what's happening, I hear what's happening, I understand, and I choose how I want to deal with this. In the action state, there is a state of self-control. In the reaction state, you lose your peace of mind, your happiness, and usually you end up doing or saying something which makes things worse. So I'd recommend experiment with, think more about these two contexts for life. So that was the second thing, the soul care, the life view, upgrading your life view. And third thing, just briefly I'll touch upon, which I think is very important, especially for people sort of entering into adult life, for young people, is something called having a sense of purpose. Right? Having a sense of purpose in life. Because a sense of purpose enables you to be able to contribute. It's important for a human being to feel useful, to feel valuable, to have a sense of contribution. Yeah? As many of you who have children will know that if a child feels useful, he or she feels happy. I have something to offer, I have something to do. So too for us, it's important to think about what's your individual sense of purpose in your life. Every single soul is different and unique. Now, to take a very quick example, think of anything in this room and think of the purpose of that thing. For example, what's the purpose of this? It's writing, huh? Okay, what is the purpose of this? Right, so I can drink. What's the purpose of the flowers? Okay, all right. What's the purpose of the fans? Right, to cool the atmosphere. What's the purpose of the curtains? No, they can't look inside, something, right? In other words, we're saying everything has its unique purpose. Purpose means how it is useful, right? The function of something. If there was something in this room which did not have a purpose, we would think, why do they have that here? If we had a big elephant standing here in the corner, you may think, excuse me, why do you have this elephant here? Which means, how is that useful for us? So if everything has its own purpose and usefulness, the question arises, what are you useful for? Right? What is your sense of usefulness? There's only one person who can answer that question. The person you look at in the mirror every morning when you wake up, and you're brushing your teeth. Because purpose is something you detect, not something you create. I believe in every soul there is a sense of purpose, but you have to find it by listening to yourself. Now, of course, it's another huge topic. How do you find your purpose? But here are one or two clues just to finish off. And that is, think of times in your life when you felt highly motivated. Times when the best of you came up to the surface. Those moments, and join the dots together to see where it was that the best of you came out. In which area was it? What sets you on fire from inside? And I believe if you genuinely and honestly want to know that, then life will provide clues and signals from around you. That's been my experience. Be open to clues and signals, and you begin to understand, this is my, as we say in French, my raison d'être, my reason to be. And I have found that if you're living a life in alignment to your purpose, then you're so motivated, your happiness level is very high, your contentment belongs to you. If you're living a life which is not connected with your purpose, motivation goes up and down, and our happiness is based upon the events. People who live a life of purpose, they own their contentment, they own their motivation. Even when they may experience some failure, they don't get disheartened and despondent. They just keep going, and it makes them stronger next time. So discovering purpose is an inner journey which requires some silence time, listening to my own self, understanding my own inner world. Okay, so I hope there is something from tonight which will be useful for you and can carry away and apply in your life. And I know there's one or two more things we have yet to do tonight. So from my side, I just thank you for your attention and for playing along with me. And good luck on your own journeys. Thank you very much.
Okay. Happiness formula. You all get the formula? Yes? So it is, first we need to experiment, then we will experience the fruit of it. Yes? So from today onwards, we all will use this formula to experience the happiness in our lives. Thank you very much, Yogesh Bhai, for that wonderful, very empowering talk. And we look forward to having you more and more.